My name is Dylan McFadden. I'm the host of this podcast. We've been doing this 3 years now, or I've been doing it 3 years now.
Feels like 3 years.
It does a little bit. It's okay.
What's your superpower, Daniel? Quips.
I have nothing else. I have nothing else in my life. Don't call it an upset. At least, don't call it that to Michael McDowell. I'm Dylan McFadden, host of Dropping the Hammer with Dylan McFadden, presented by the Arkansas Democrat Gazette, and we are back to talk about Michael McDowell's dominating win at Indianapolis Motor Speedway, the road course, last Sunday.
The gap is closed to a second. Through 14 for the final time, Michael McDowell comes onto the front stretch in Indy. The 38-year-old is going to win at Indianapolis.
Yes, yes, you. Good work, boys.
And with me back after a week away is my podcasting co-host for life, Jared Haas. How are you doing, Jared?
That's an interesting way to put it. Welcome back. We ran the Indy Road Course, and Michael McDowell decided to shake up the playoff picture. Not stirred, shaken.
And he did it in very, very dominating fashion, led 54 laps, a career high laps for him in a race, which topped his previous high of 34, an appropriate number for the driver of number 34 for Front Row Motorsports. And I classify this race, for me, it's an upset. Michael McDowell, as we'll soon hear from him, doesn't think it is, because he did go out and just straight up whipped the competition. Also, he did that in practice too. Didn't practice, qualified third or fourth, and then just ran away and beat Chase Elliott for the win. It was an upset for me. Jared, what do you classify this as for the team known as Front Row Motorsports?
If you're comparing this to Hendrick Motorsports, yes, that's an upset. This should be Chase Elliott's backyard. But this weekend, Michael McDowell and Daniel Suarez had the speed on that. So I wouldn't consider it like completely out of left field. Brad Keselowski winning a Talladega in 2009 for Phoenix Racing, or, you know, the Trevor Bayne type of underdog. I wouldn't call it an underdog. I think I'd call it, you know, an unexpected, oh, Mike McDowell dominated this type of force and, you know, led 54 laps. But I don't think this is like the old underdog fashion where Front Row Motorsports has grown in the past 10 plus years in NASCAR. They've definitely developed a little bit more and a little bit more, and they've hit their stride this year. So I wouldn't consider it upset, but definitely shakes up the playoff field, which I think is the bigger surprise of this.
Yeah. Well, for me, why I consider it an upset, because historically, this is the fourth win for Front Row Motorsports in the Cup Series. The first three were on super speedways, and then you had the one in 2016 with Chris Buescher, which was due to fog, which is just that doesn't happen very often, due to fog. But those were the three circumstances: super speedways, fog race at Pocono, and this is the first time where Front Row Motorsports has just straight up gone out and just won it, took it, and then ran away with the goods. But before this, like in over 1,200 starts, this is just their fourth win. For me, historically, I still consider this an upset, just because we're not accustomed to this kind of performance from that team.
But also, too, you got to realize Mike McDowell has a pretty extensive background in road course racing.
I know.
So if this was Todd Gilliland getting the win, it'd be a little bit different story, but this is a road course right up the alley. You know, Front Row Motorsports starting to climb up a little bit. It seems like Ford as a whole has been starting to perform better. I mean, RFK Racing went to Victory Lane back-to-back past two weekends, so Ford on the uptick, Front Row Motorsports on the uptick, Michael McDowell performed well at road courses. It's just hard to sell it as an underdog, the true iconic underdog wins compared to other ones.
Do you think the McDowell's team told him about Todd Gilliland's wreck on the oval turn one and two? Do you think he You found out.
You
about
don't
that
say
at all?
Anything. But I kind of find this one like a Ross Chastain's win in 2022 at Circuit of the Americas.
Yeah,
we were both there for that. It didn't. It was surprising, but it didn't feel like an upset. I think that's I kind of correlate those two wins together as the shock factor.
Well, I mean, Chastain had had a history of winning by that point over the previous 2-3 years. That was a team that had basically taken the assets of Chip Ganassi Racing.
Yeah, but they weren't. Chip Ganassi Racing's not what it was back in the day. It was just more of less of a team that hasn't performed well. So, you know, that I think is more of a direct relationship to compared to like those Cinderella wins.
For me, when I consider upset, it's like in basketball, like a last second buzzer beater, you know, walk off home run in baseball. That I usually correlate that with an upset, something that happens like at the last second. But I think for this, in my opinion, this is more like, you remember 5-6 years ago when a number 16 seed finally won against the number 1 seed in the NCAA tournament. Do you remember that when it finally happened?
I don't really follow March Madness. I get what you're saying, an upset's an upset, but every team beating Hendrick Motorsports or Joe Gibbs Racing would be an upset. So
yeah.
Considering the fact, you would, by that logical argument, these three past weekends, you would consider upsets then, no?
No, because RFK Racing's not Front Row Motorsports. RFK Racing, though, over the last few years, yeah, they haven't been stellar, but they still have that pedigree. They still have that name of they've won tons of races, and they're building themselves back up.
So part of that upset factor, though, I want to clarify, is because they don't have the pedigree. They don't have the starts on that, too.
Yeah.
They don't have the experience.
Yeah, that's along those lines. Like Chris Buescher also, like McDowell at Michigan, just went out and won. Like, he held off Martin Truex Jr., who had a better car, yeah, and just straight up did it. And then you had Richmond, where RFK dominated the race. They led the most laps, yeah, combined, and then Chris Buescher was there at the end to win. But Michael McDowell has not been in that situation in a while. Like, he did, like, let's go through McDowell's road course results in the Next Gen era, which began last year. Starting last year, he had a 13th, a 3rd, which was at Sonoma, 8th, 8th, 6th, 27th, 12th, 7th, 7th, and then his win Sunday at Indianapolis. That's an average of 9.2. That's the number I got. He had the winning car at Sonoma this year. He had one that could have won, and they had a fluke on pit road that took it away, which shout out to Daniel Suarez.
He still climbed back to finish 3rd, but yeah, I mean, those stats right there don't prove it, and that's why Mike McDowell's on Denny Hamlin's podcast.
Yeah,
Mike McDowell's a pretty good road racer, so not really. I don't think so. I understand the upset and the, you know, this, if you looked at the team 10 years ago, Mike McDowell was starting to parking at the end of his career, end of that
with
era.
With a completely different team. I don't even remember who he was racing for 10 years ago. When was he? He was with Michael Waltrip Motorsports in the late 2000s, right?
He was with that, and then he went to Phil Parsons' 98 team for a few years. But I think he jumped over.
There was his Levine family.
Yeah,
there
was Levine. Yep, that's where he was around during that time 10 years ago. So he did a lot of starting and parking, Prism, HP, you know, Phil Parsons, and then kind of took Levine family racing. And then after Levine, that's when he joined Front Row Motorsports in 2018. So definitely an interesting path, but I think Mike McDowell's proved it right here. 9.2 averaging finish on road courses in the Next Gen era.
Yep,
that's a force to stay with. That's a contender right there.
And he has more wins in this era than Chase Elliott does on a road course.
There you go. So,
and so we'll get to it when we like do a rundown of the top 10. But this was Elliott's 3rd top 5 on a road course this year, mm-hmm, and he's missed one race.
Yeah.
So it was an impressive result. Elliott kind of closed the gap there over the last 2 laps, but it was
Mike Goodall was just playing it easy. He wasn't going to go send it into the final corner and run over it. But
before we go deeper into that, we have some video and audio from post-race at Indianapolis. And first up is Michael McDowell, who he got his 2nd career win, which we failed to mention up until now. His first one was 2 years ago in the Great American Race, the Daytona 500. So he now has wins on the two biggest, most important tracks on the U.S. soil, which is nothing light. That those are bragging rights right there. Mm. He has three NASCAR wins. The third was at Road America in the Xfinity Series back in...
like 2016 was with Richard Childress Racing. Yeah,
it's been a minute. But that, if I have three wins at three tracks, that's a good bushel right there. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not complaining about any of those. But no, but here is Michael McDowell. When he was... he's asked by Jordan Bianchi of The Athletic, should this be considered a Cinderella win? And his answer is absolutely not. But here's more from Michael McDowell on what this win means in perspective to his career.
Jordan Bianchi, The Athletic. Daytona was a speedway race. We know how those are characterized. But to come here on a road course to do this, to beat them the way you beat them today, what does that say as a statement?
I think that it just shows how strong our team is, right? It's one thing, you know, if you're restarting sixth here on a green-white checker, you fire it in there and you steal a win, right? And that's not what we did today. And what we did today is we had the fastest car and we won. And I think it says a lot for our race team and what we have been able to do and what we've able to build on. And, you know, this next-gen car has really helped us on the road courses. And last year we were close. We weren't a race winning car, but I felt like we were a top 3 to 5 car. And we've just built on that and built on that and built on that. And, you know, at Sonoma, I think we had a shot at it before we hung that lug on that last pit stop. I mean, there wasn't a lot of people talking about it, but we were the only one that could run with Martin and felt like, hey, we're pretty close. If we execute and do everything right and hit it right, maybe we can actually go and contend. But yesterday was just different. When I unloaded yesterday, I felt like, yeah, we're going to be contenders. And if you just look at practice, we were the fastest in practice, fastest 5-lap, fastest 10-lap, fastest average. And I woke up this morning nervous. I really did. I don't normally wake up nervous. I was anxious. Feeling like I think I have a race winning car here and I just got to go do my job and not look like an idiot. And thankful we were able to do it.
And then the narrative for this is going to be, this is like a Cinderella victory, right? In your estimation, is this a Cinderella win?
Absolutely not. I think we've been the fastest road course car since this next gen car over average of it. And I think statistically it'll show that, right? I think if you just look at the average finish and you look at average running position, we've been a top 5 car every single road course race since this next gen car's come in. So is it a Cinderella story from a lot of different aspects? Maybe, but off of pure performance, like I feel like we've been nailing it and having a shot at it. But I also look at it as like, we're going up against some really big teams with a lot of resources, and to do what we did today is pretty awesome.
And also, we got audio from Front Row Motorsports general manager Jerry Freeze. It's Jerry Freeze, right?
I believe so.
Jerry Freeze, where he talks about how far the team's come in the last 2 to 3 years and how significant the next gen car has been into that development. And one thing of note, before we hear the audio, like you mentioned earlier, McDowell was a guest on Denny Hamlin's podcast, Actions Detrimental. And he said on that podcast that if he does things right the rest of the season, the team might have a Hawkeye inspection set up for their team by the end of the year, which they don't have right now. This is a rig that scans the car, that cars go through during inspection at the track, that, you know, they pass it, then they can go to the starting grid if they fail, they have to go back, make a readjustment, blah, blah, blah.
It's just the templates that
yeah,
are on that.
Yeah. But they don't have one. They use the rig that RFK Racing has, or they go to NASCAR has one that they go to. So they have one. They have access to one, but they don't have their own. And that's very important for a team to get dialed in for a weekend. And they've been trying to slowly building up their assets. And so here's what Jerry Freeze, general manager of Front Row Motorsports, said about how that team's been kind of coalescing up to this point over the last 3 years, thanks to, in part, the next-gen car.
Yeah, you know, I think to me it all kind of started in 2020 when we were kind of winding up the Gen 6 car, and NASCAR had kind of put a moratorium on advancement of the chassis and suspension components. And once we were able to start getting on a more level playing field with the product that we were bringing to the racetrack, you know, our performance started to pick up. I think you started to see that a guy like Michael McDowell had a lot of talent. And now if you give him the same car that these other guys have, you know, he's going to really show that he can get it done. And so then you advance into the next gen era, the way they've consolidated the practice time. I just think it gives a chance with that middle tier budget, let's say, that's going to do the right things, have the right engine program, hire the good people, have a good pit crew, to have days like this on the racetrack. It's hard to sustain it across, you know, a 36 race season. And that's what we're just trying to get better at, to be this way week in and week out, to be a top 10 team, to be a top 15 team. I don't know that we're quite there as a top 10 team. I do feel like every weekend, I feel like we're a solid top 15 team if we just execute our race. And so, I think the way the rules have changed and with the next gen car coming in, it's really kind of played in that mid-sized team's favor, that if you're doing the right things, you can be competitive. And so we've just got to keep on investing in those areas to try to improve our team and become a more constant top 10 threat. And when making the playoffs isn't such a big story, it's maybe expected.
All right, Jared. So let's get deeper in this top 10.
Mike McDowell won this race. Chase Elliott finished second. Daniel Suarez finished third. Tyler Reddick was fourth. Alex Bowman finished fifth. Chase Briscoe, good run for him, finished sixth. Martin Truex Jr. was seventh. Kyle Larson was eighth. Ninth was Christopher Bell. And rounding out the top 10, you know him as SVG, Shane Van Gisbergen.
Like I mentioned, this was Chase Elliott's third top five finish on a road course this year, having missed
Circuit of the Americas.
Circuit of the Americas. It's his first top. This is first top five and finish better than 10th since Chicago. So not the best of stretches for him, which includes a wreck at Michigan. Daniel Suarez finished third. That's only his third top five of the year. Tyler Reddick earned his seventh top five, which is three off his 2022 mark, which was with Richard Childress Racing. And this is pretty significant to note. Alex Bowman, fourth top five of the year. Early this year, he set out three races due to breaking his back. And you can go back and also listen to my interview where he talks about that. But Alex Bowman has missed eight races over the last 2 years due to injury. He's made 52 starts. And in that time, he's only had eight top fives. I know we're talking about injuries, backs, concussions. How concerning is that to you that Alex Bowman has only eight top fives in the last 52 starts?
Well, it's a Hendrick Motorsports, the bar is set high. I still see the concern of the fact that Alex Bowman, will get into this, needs to win.
Oh, yeah.
And he hasn't won in a while. And injuries, you know, you may be able to compete, you know, all the way. But I feel like you see this in baseball where people are, you know, they're healed, they're able to do stuff, but they're not on the top of their prime. Mm-hmm. They're not 100%. They're like 95, 98%, but they're not that 100% that takes them over the edge. I think we're seeing that with Alex Bowman. The back is a pretty important thing in a race car, yeah, considering how much it controls and how much G's you just feel going through that. Mm-hmm. And also, too, like I said, this was one of our races that you didn't really have a stop. You only had one caution.
No, you didn't. Yeah.
So you were go, go, go on the, basically after the first caution to the end, 77 laps. So a little bit concerning.
All right, moving on. So Chase Briscoe, he finished sixth. That's only his third top five of the year, which is three off his pace from 2022. I didn't write down how many top fives he has for this year.
Third top five. He finished sixth.
Whoops. My bad. Next the correction. Whoops.
Yeah, he's only had three top fives this season, but this is his sixth top ten.
Okay.
Like I said, in most of those good runs, it came at the beginning of the season. He had a stretch of three straight top fives, Bristol Dirt fifth, fifth at Martinsville, fourth at Talladega, but, you know, and then a seventh at Phoenix, but he only had a 10th at Loudon. That was his best finish since the beginning of the season, that stretch, since Talladega. Okay. So it's been a while since Chase Briscoe's been there, and Stewart Haas Racing struggling, just scratching their heads, where you have RFK Racing winning races, you have Front Row Motorsports mm-hmm. winning races, and then all of a sudden you have Stewart Haas Racing. They're searching for a win.
Yeah, it's remarkable that we've gotten this far into the season and there's just nothing from Stewart Haas.
No Stewart Haas Racing car has finished won this season.
That's
Eric Almirola does not even have a top five.
Wow. Yeah, Kevin Harvick's been the main threat, and he really wasn't a threat at Indianapolis. No. So, all right, and our last note about the top 10, Martin Truex Jr. continues to be a machine. He has finished seventh or better in the last five races. He leads the series with top 10 finishes, I believe, with 12.
Don't call it a 14, comeback.
14.
Don't call it a comeback for Martin Truex Jr. because I feel like he rides that. You know, he had that indecision of like, am I going to retire? Am I not? I'm enjoying this. And he's still riding the momentum. And seventh place finish, quiet seventh place finish for Truex. And those are the runs that they don't get talked about. They're not the pretty ones, but they do make the difference at the end of the day.
Yep. All right. So I forgot, two weeks ago, we talked about Ricky Stenhouse Jr. versus somebody else.
We talked about Ricky Stenhouse Jr. and Chris Buescher.
Okay.
Because Chris Buescher won, and now Mike McDowell is in the playoffs.
All right. So this shakes things up. All right. So the first round of the playoffs is Darlington, Kansas, and Bristol.
Yeah.
All right. So Ricky Stenhouse Jr., Michael McDowell, Chris Buescher. Who are you taking to get out of the round of 16?
Mike McDowell's not had the consistency compared to Ricky Stenhouse Jr. Chris Buescher can still do it, but I think McDowell's going to be an early exit in the round of 16. But we still got some few spots to fill in as well, but I'll hear your thoughts as well on those three drivers. Who do you think is going to be the best performing of those three?
Oh, Buescher. Buescher by far. But yeah. Stenhouse, I wouldn't be afraid to pick Stenhouse to have a really good day at Bristol. Mm-hmm. That's kind of a good track for him. And also, Darlington, I could see him having a good day there. I think last year, McDowell, or the year before that, he had like a top 10 run at Darlington in the spring.
Like I said, they can pull out a lot of stuff. But from what I was seeing, the consistency in Sanford, McDowell, he had some good runs, just not some good runs otherwhere. And you need to be consistently good to make it out of there. And McDowell is going to be one of the lower ranked drivers. So he needs to overperform in that. It's going to be a tough battle, but he's in the show. That's the important part. But I think the most important thing, there's one driver we haven't even talked about who's on the bubble right now.
Mm-hmm.
And it's Bubba Wallace.
28 points.
He started the day 58 points up above this cutoff line. The cutoff line moved. He's now 28 points. More or less, I think, was like 30 points behind because you had obviously McDowell won. Chase Elliott had a good run. Daniel Suarez was in the cut. He had a really good points day. Suarez scored 51 points, and Bubba Wallace only scored, it looks like it was 19 points. Mm. How concerned are you with Bubba Wallace going into another road course? Basically, over half of his point cushion was cut.
He's not in a good position. And what's on the other side of Watkins Glen? A track he is good at. Daytona, but again, Daytona is Daytona. No matter how good you are there, you know, there could be a 15 car pileup in front of you in a moment's notice. So, no, you got to be concerned. But look, the people he's like up against, you have Daniel Suarez, who's minus 28. Mm-hmm. Like I said, he only has three top fives this year. Then you have Ty Gibbs, who's minus 49. Chase Elliott and Alex Bowman are minus 80. So all these guys are in must-win scenarios. Chase Elliott's going to be a favorite at Watkins Glen. Bowman, I mean, I wouldn't have picked Bowman to finish in the top 10 this weekend. Real, like, this is one thing I forgot to note. Like, if you look at the top 10 for Indy, the only real like surprise in that is Alex Bowman.
Yeah.
For me, because Chase Briscoe, he's won there in Xfinity, so he has got a little bit of
experience. Reddick's won on road courses. He won there at the Indy road course. Trucks have been consistent for us. Kyle Larson's performed well. Christopher Bell's on an uptick, and obviously SVG won at Chicago Street Course. No joke there. So Bowman is a surprise, but I think now with this line shifting, it's basically Suarez versus Bubba Wallace. Is Suarez, can he close that gap or leap over Bubba Wallace going into Daytona, and where anything can happen, and Suarez just survives compared to Bubba Wallace? Everyone else I see as a must-win situation. Ty Gibbs, decent at road courses, won at the Xfinity race, but I don't think he's going to be jumping up there unless he gets a win somehow. But the thing is, if somebody else outside the playoffs gets another win again, let's just say Chase Elliott wins at Watkins Glen, makes it interesting for Daytona, as Brad Keselowski and Kevin Harvick are one of those two drivers are going to be in the playoffs at least. They're not locked in yet because the points can flip too. If you got another winner there, and Daytona gets another new winner as well, it's one of those two drivers that missed the playoffs.
I can't imagine if like Kevin Harvick missed the playoffs in his last year. Can you imagine that?
Well, Truex missed the playoffs last year.
Yeah, I know. But yeah,
and he was a top five in points before going into Daytona.
So, yeah. Well, anyway, that should do it. Close the book on Indy. So instead of doing a news segment this week, we're going to have a little bit of fun with paint schemes.
Are we having fun?
With paint schemes.
Are we having fun with paint and colors? Oh, my.
But anyway, here up next, me and Jared and I share our respective three favorite NASCAR paint schemes. All right, Jared, paint schemes. I love them. We debate over them. They're around the spring of each year with the Darlington throwback race. They become like the main topic of conversation. So you and I, we went to our separate corners and came up with our respective three favorite NASCAR paint schemes. And I think our parameters for this were like one full-time like paint scheme, a one-off paint scheme, then like just a wild card. Just pick one. Was that right? Did we do this?
I think so. Yeah. Let's roll into it.
You go first. What's your full time favorite scheme?
Is full time? I want to make sure. Is this full time now or full time? That's
whenever.
Well, I'm gonna go with a classic in the vault of Busch Series, Larry Foyt Hera's purple paint scheme that he ran in the Busch Series in 2002. If you can pull off a purple car, you're pretty good.
Okay. I have no idea what you're talking about. I can't wait to see a picture.
We will show it up here. Carry on. What's your pick?
I could have just gone with Dale Earnhardt Sr. Goodwrench scheme, but I didn't. I went with Mark Martin's 1998 Valvoline scheme with like the graphic of the little tiny V's, which I didn't know until earlier this year that's what those were. But that you just usually you can't miss with a Valvoline blue, red, white, and blue paint scheme. But this one from 98 is an all-timer for me, especially the red wheels on the car.
I think Trevor Bain ran the throwback paint scheme and he changed the V's to an A.
Yeah, I think you're right. So next up is a one-off, and I'll go this time. Dale Earnhardt Sr.'s 1998 Bass Pro Shop scheme that he used in the Winston. From 1995 to 2000, the Winston was basically this really cool one-off paint scheme race. Mostly just for like Dale Earnhardt, Mark Martin, and Jeff Gordon, and Terry Labonte. Terry Labonte had a few. But back in 98, he had Bass Pro Shops for this race, and this scheme, it just looks cool. I can't believe they haven't done it as a throwback scheme at Darlington yet, seeing as Austin Dillon is sponsored by Bass Pro Shops. It just seems like a no-brainer, but it's just, I like just the use of gold on it. You don't really see that kind of gold, sparkling gold, on a car these days. So
I'm gonna go somewhere new. I actually saw this car in person, really cool. I'm gonna have to go with Ryan Ellis's Ford Loco paint scheme that ran at Circuit of the Americas, out of this world, with the pink and the aliens and like the Earth. Okay. Really wild paint scheme.
You're digging deep for your
scheme. I saw this year. This happened this year, bud.
Wild card. What's your wild card?
I'm actually going to go with the good old charter paint schemes before the rebrand. The Greg Biffle, Carl Edwards 60, and I'll even throw in the number 9 when it was with Gillette.
Charter?
Yeah, Charter Communications. The purple and the yellow and the white.
Okay.
What's your pick?
Well, my initially, I was going to go with Bobby Allison's 1988 Miller High Life car, but we don't have access to a decent picture of it. Because that's just a really cool car on a Buick of all manufacturers. But no, instead I went with Kyle Petty's early 90s Mellow Yellow paint scheme. It's just a timeless... It's a timeless paint scheme that also screams early 90s.
Yes.
And it was driven by Kyle Larson at Darlington back in 2015 or 2016. And it just looked so good. So good. The yellows...
You can't go wrong with neon.
Also it's a Days of Thunder adjacent mm-hmm. paint scheme. Because it's...
Yeah. Anyway. Still some great picks there.
So, no, yeah. And Coca-Cola, I don't know why you don't want diecast made of the cars that have your paint schemes, but please change your mind. I really want that Kyle Larson Mellow Yellow car. Please. All right. That's it. That's our three favorite paint schemes of all time. Now moving on to our preview of this weekend's NASCAR Cup Series race at Watkins Glen International. Okay, Jared, it's that time of year where we get to experience the second worst sponsor name for a race behind the mile-long name that Brickyard 400 had for about 5 years. It's time for the insert blank at the Glen, and it's the Go Bowling at the Glen at Watkins Glen International, which can be seen this Sunday at 2 p.m. Central on USA Network. How do you feel about Watkins Glen International,
Jared? I still say that's... I don't know. The hell of a good sour cream dips at the Watkins Glen is a pretty interesting name.
Okay. All right. I didn't know that was the name. There was the Cheez-It at the Glen.
Yeah, the Cheez-It. Yeah.
For a long time, it was just the Bud at the Glen. I want to know who came up with that naming convention. And I just want to hear the reason why. Why do we have to do
it? It's at the Glen. It's at the Glen. Yeah, but Watkins Glen on the schedule, a fast... You know, road course, I would compare, you know, it's like the opposite of Sonoma, where Sonoma's a very technical road course. Road courses are technical, but there's a lot of high-speed components.
It's long been described as like the super speedway of road courses, yeah. At least when it was just Watkins Glen and Sonoma. But
pretty similar too, ironically, I think more similar with the Indy road course than Sonoma to Watkins Glen. But yeah, like I said, two races ago, another road course. Contenders and pretenders. I still say Chase Elliott is going to be a contender and Daniel Suarez is going to be a contender. But I think the pretender in more of the situation. I know he won last week, McDowell. I don't know. It's going to be tough for him to go back-to-back.
Well, he finished 6th or 7th there last year. And that was his first top 10 at Watkins Glen ever.
Mm-hmm.
He led like 14 laps in that race, but that was like in the first stage when they were on rain tires.
Yeah.
But yeah, I imagine he'll have a chance, but I don't think they're not going to be taking the car they had at Indy to Watkins Glen, unfortunately.
And AJ Allmendinger, that's the other name we've gone without in this show.
Oh, he had a bad day at Indy.
He had a bad day.
Yeah.
We just don't talk about that bad day at Indy, but he finished 2nd here last year.
He did?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Right behind Kyle Larson.
Okay, I did not remember that.
He did not lead a lap, but he finished 2nd that day. Started 6th, but yeah. But it just seems like Colic Racing, that was their time to shine, and they didn't really shine at all at Indy Road Course.
He was not having a good time.
No. So. Terrible, not good day.
But no, at Watkins Glen, we got a 90-lap race for around the 2.4-mile road course, which is in Watkins Glen, New York. Hendrick Motorsports has won the last 4 races there. I completely forgot that Kyle Larson also won it 2 years ago. So he's won the last 2. Chase Elliott won the 2 before that. So it's been a while since a non-Hendrick car won there. The last time this race went beyond the scheduled distance of 90 laps, 2011. So
and that was a pretty iconic finish.
No, you're thinking of 2012.
Yeah, well,
you're thinking of 12.
Well, Ambrose and Keselowski were up there too.
So, but no, it has been a while since this. So if you're planning out your Sunday evening, expect this race to go up to the distance and not a lap further. Knock on wood. No stage breaks again.
And yeah. We saw that only one caution at the Indy road course. So, I mean, again, this is going to be a race about attrition.
Even at Sonoma, we didn't have very many cautions.
If you're going to make a mistake, don't. There's no chance for it to cooperate. You may never know when you're going to get that chance, that caution again, to bank on it, which is, I think, good for racing, those not having those stage breaks. But, yeah, 2 p.m. Central on the USA Network.
So who do you got? I feel like we should. Are you taking Hendrick Motorsports or the field?
Oh yeah, you know I'm gonna take Hendrick Motorsports. Chase Elliott's gonna have to go swinging out here. This has to be his best hot rod. This has to be it. He can't go into Daytona expecting to go win. It's gonna have to be done here at Watkins Glen if he wants to make the playoffs.
All right,
You're picking the field, but what you got?
Yeah, I'm gonna take the field. There's part of me I don't know how Chris Buescher, what his history has been at Watkins Glen.
He finished ninth last year.
Ninth.
Yeah, again, the contenders, Suarez finished top five here as well. Reddick was up here. A lot of the same contenders that we saw at the Indy Road Course.
Yeah. Yeah. Like most of them, exactly. Except Logano, who also had a bad day.
Yeah.
I want to take Chris Buescher.
You're going three-peat there.
Three out of four.
Three out of four ain't bad, as not Meatloaf would say. Two out of three ain't bad. That's the song. So
okay.
All right. We're going to get Daniel Coulter next week. All right. I got Hendrick Motorsports, Chase Elliott. You got Mr. Chris Buescher winning.
In the field. All right. So, yeah. 2 p.m. Central, USA Network. That's when you can find the Go Bowling at the Glen. All right. Well, this has been a good episode. I'm Daniel McFadden. You can find me on Twitter. I'm going to call it Twitter until you wipe that name from my memory. Twitter at Daniel McFadden. You can email me at dmcfadden at adgnewsroom.com. Jared, where can they find you?
We're at the Men in Black, this X thing. You can find me on the social media apps, Real Jared Haas, the verified account. So yeah, that's pretty easy to find, but it's Real Jared Haas.
And please like, subscribe, share with your friends, point them in our direction if they like NASCAR and want to have a good time. But anyway, I'm Dale McFadden. Thanks you guys for joining us this week. We'll see you again next week as we recap Watkins Glen and then preview the regular season finale at Daytona International Speedway. It's going to be a wild couple weeks. See you then.